13. To himself, Emmanuel said, I am being poisoned. The vapors of her realm poison me and vitiate my will. You are wrong, Zena said. I feel less strong. You feel less indignation. Let's go and get Herb Asher. I want him with us. I will narrow down the area of our game. I will arrange it especially for him. In what way? We will contest for him, Zena said. Come. She beckoned to the boy to follow her. In the cocktail lounge, Herb Asher sat with a glass of scotch and water in front of him. He had been waiting an hour, but the evening entertainment had not begun. The cocktail lounge was filled with people. Constant noise assailed his ears, but for him this was worth it, despite the rather large cover charge. Ribis, across from him, said, I just don't understand what you see in her. She's going to go a long way, Herb said, if she gets any kind of a break at all. He wondered if record company scouts came here to the Golden Hind. I hope so, he said to himself. I'd like to leave. I don't feel well. Could we go? I'd prefer not to. Ribis sipped at her tall mixed drink fitfully. So much noise, she said, her voice virtually inaudible. He looked at his watch. It's almost 9. Her first set is at 9. Who is she? Ribis said. She's a new young singer, Herb Asher said. She's adapted the lute books of John Dowland for... Who's John Dowland? I never heard of him. Late 16th century England. Linda Fox has modernized his lute songs. He was the first composer to write for solo voice. Before that, 4 or more people sang, the old madrigal form. I can't explain it. You have to hear her. If she's so good, why isn't she on TV? Ribis said. Herb said, she will be. Lights on the stage began to glow. 3 musicians leaped up onto it and began fussing with the audio system. Each had in his possession a vibralute. A hand touched Herb Asher on the shoulder. Hi. Glancing up, he saw a young woman whom he did not know. But he thought, she seems to know me. I'm sorry, he began. May we sit down? The woman, pretty, wearing a floral print top and jeans, a male pouch purse over her shoulder, drew a chair back and seated herself beside Herb Asher. Sit down, Manny, she said to a small boy who stood awkwardly near the table. What a beautiful child, Herb Asher thought. How did he get in here? There aren't supposed to be any miners in here. Are these friends of yours? Ribis said. The pretty, dark-haired young woman said, Herb hasn't seen me since college. How are you, Herb? Don't you recognize me? She held out her hand to him, and reflexively he took it. And then as he shook her hand, he remembered her. They had been in school together, in a poli-sci course. Zena, he said, delighted. Zena Palace. This is my little brother, Zena said, motioning the boy to sit down. Manny. Manny Palace. To Ribis, she said, Herb hasn't changed a bit. I knew it was him when I saw him. You're here to see Linda Fox? I've never heard her. They say she's real good. Very good, Herb said, pleased at her support. Hello, Mr. Asher, the boy said. Glad to meet you, Manny. He shook hands with the boy. This is my wife, Ribis. So, you two are married, Zena said. Mind if I smoke? She lit a cigarette. I keep trying to quit, but when I quit, I start eating a lot and get as fat as a pig. Is your purse genuine leather? Ribis said, interested. Yes. Zena passed it over to her. I've never seen a leather purse before, Ribis said. There she is, Herb Asher said. Linda Fox had appeared on the stage. The audience clapped. She looks like a pizza waitress, Ribis said. Zena, taking her purse back, said, If she's going to make it big, she's going to have to lose some weight. I mean, she looks all right, but... What is this thing you have about weight? Herb Asher said, irritated. The boy, Manny, spoke up.
Herbert. Herbert.
Yes? He bent to hear.
Remember,
the boy said. Puzzled, he started to say, "Remember what?" But then Linda Fox took hold of the microphone, half shut her eyes, and began to sing. She had a round face and almost a double chin, but her skin was fair, and, most important to him of all, she had long eyelashes that flickered as she sang. They fascinated him, and he sat spellbound. Linda wore an extremely low-cut gown, and even from where he sat he could see the outline of her nipples. She had on no bra. "Shall I sue? Shall I seek for grace? Shall I pray? Shall I prove? Shall I strive to a heavenly joy with an earthly love?" Audibly, Ribbis said, "I hate that song. I have heard her before." Several people hissed at her to be quiet. "Not by her, though," Ribbis said. "She isn't even original. That song..." She piped down, but she was not happy. When the song ended and the audience had begun to clap, Herb Asher said to his wife, "You never heard Shall I Sue before. Nobody else sings it but Linda Fox." "You just like to gape at her nipples," Ribbis said. To Herb Asher, the little boy said, "Would you take me to the men's room, Mr. Asher?" "Now?" he said, dismayed. "Can't you wait until she's through singing?" The boy said, "Now, Mr. Asher." With reluctance, he led Manny through the maze of tables to the doors at the rear of the lounge. But before they had entered the men's room, Manny stopped him. "You can see her better from here," Manny said. It was true. He was now much closer to the stage. He and the boy stood together in silence as Linda Fox sang, "Weep you no more, sad fountains." When the song ended, Manny said, "You don't remember, do you? She has enchanted you. Wake up, Herbert Asher. You know me well, and I know you. Linda Fox does not sing her songs at an obscure cocktail lounge in Hollywood. She is famous throughout the galaxy. She is the most important entertainer of this decade. The chief prelate and the procurator Maximus invite her to..." "She's going to sing again," Herb Asher interrupted. He barely heard the boy's words, and they made no sense to him. "A babbling boy," he thought, "making it hard for me to hear Linda Fox, just what I need." After the song had ended, Manny said, "Herbert, Herbert, do you want to meet her? Is that what you want?" "What?" he murmured, his eyes, his attention, fixed on Linda Fox. "God," he thought, "what a figure she has. She's practically falling out of her dress." He thought, "I wish my wife was built like that." "She will come this way," Manny said, "when she finishes. Stand here, Herb Asher, and she will pass directly by you." "You're joking," he said. "No," Manny said. "You will have what you want most in the world, that which you dreamed of as you lay on your bunk in your dome." "What dome?" he said. Manny said, "How you have fallen from heaven, bright morning star." "Feld, you mean one of those colony planet domes?" Herb Asher said. "I can't make you listen, can I?" Manny said. "If I could say to you..." "She is coming this way," Herb Asher said. "How did you know?" He moved a few steps toward her. Linda Fox walked rapidly, with small steps, a gentle expression on her face. "Thank you," she was saying to people who spoke to her. For a moment she stopped to give her autograph to a black youth nattily dressed. Tapping Herb Asher on the shoulder, a waitress said, "You're going to have to take that boy out of here, sir. We can't have minors in here." "Sorry," Herb Asher said. "Right now," the waitress said. "Okay," he said. He took Manny by the shoulder and, with unhappy reluctance, led him back toward their table. And as he turned away, he saw out of the corner of his eye the fox pass by the spot at which he and the boy had stood. Manny had been right. A few more seconds, and he would have been able to speak a few words to her, and perhaps she would have answered. Manny said, "It is her desire to trick you, Herb Asher. She offered it to you and took it away again. If you want to meet Linda Fox, I will see that you do. I promise you. Remember this, because it will come to pass. I will not see you cheated." "I don't know what you're talking about," Herb said. but if I could meet her...
You will,
Manny said. You're a strange kid, Herb Asher said. As they passed below a light fixture, he noticed something that startled him. He halted, and taking hold of Manny, he moved him directly under the light.
You look like Rivas, he thought.
For an instant, a flash of memory jarred him. His mind seemed to open up, as if vast spaces, open spaces, a universe of stars had flooded into it.
Herbert, the boy said, she is not real. Linda Fox, she is a phantasm of yours. But I can make her real. I confer being. It is I who makes the irreal into the real, and I can do it for you, with her.
What happened? Ribbis said when they reached the table. Manny has to leave, Herb said to Zena Pallas. The waitress said so. I guess you'll have to go. Sorry. Taking her purse and cigarettes, Zena rose.
I'm sorry. I guess I kept you from seeing the fox.
Let's go with them, Ribbis said, also rising. My head hurts, Herb. I'd like to get out of here. Resigned, he said, All right. Cheated, he thought. That was what Manny had said. I will not see you cheated. That is exactly what happened, he realized. I have been cheated this evening. Well, some other time. It would be interesting to talk to her, maybe get her autograph. He thought, close up I could see that her eyelashes are fake. Christ, he thought, how depressing. Maybe her breasts are fake, too. There are those pads they slip in. He felt disappointed and unhappy, and now he, too, wanted to leave. This evening didn't work out, he thought as he escorted Ribbis, Zena, and Manny from the club onto the dark Hollywood street. I expected so much. And then he remembered what the boy had said, the strange things, and the nanosecond of jarred memory, scenes that appeared in his mind so briefly and yet so convincingly. This is not an ordinary child, he realized. And his resemblance to my wife, I can see it now, as they stand together. He could be her son. Eerie. He shivered, even though the air was warm. Zena said, I fulfilled his wishes. I gave him what he dreamed of. All those months as he lay on his bunk, with his 3D posters of her, his tapes. You gave him nothing, Emmanuel said. You robbed him, in fact. You took something away. She is a media product, Zena said. The two of them walked slowly along the nocturnal Hollywood sidewalk, back to her fly car. That is no fault of mine. I can't be blamed if Linda Fox is not real. Here in your realm, that distinction means nothing. What can you give him? Zena said. Only illness, his wife's illness, and her death in your service. Is your gift better than mine? Emmanuel said, I made him a promise, and I do not lie. I shall fulfill that promise, he said to himself, in this realm or in my own realm. It doesn't matter, because in either case I will make Linda Fox real. That is the power I have, and it is not the power of enchantment. It is the most precious gift of all, reality. What are you thinking? Zena said. Better a live dog than a dead prince, Manny said. Who said that? It is simply common sense. Zena said, What is your meaning? I mean that your enchantment gave him nothing, and the real world... The real world, Zena said, put him in cryonic suspension for 10 years. Isn't a beautiful dream better than a cruel reality? Would you rather suffer in actuality than enjoy yourself in the domain of... She paused. Intoxication, he said. That is what your domain consists of. It is a drunken world, drunken with dancing and with joy. I say that the quality of realness is more important than any other quality, because once realness departs, there is nothing. A dream is nothing. I disagree with you. I say you cheated Herbert Asher. I say you did a cruel thing to him. I saw his reaction.
I measured his dejection, and I will make it up to him.
You will make the fox real.
Is it your wager that I can't?
My wager, Zena said, is that it doesn't matter. Real or not, she is worthless. You will have achieved nothing.
I accept the wager, he said.
Shake my hand on it.
She extended her hand. They shook, standing there on the Hollywood sidewalk under the glaring artificial light. As they flew back to Washington, D.C., Zena said,
In my realm, many things are different. Perhaps you would like to meet Party Chairman Nicholas Bulkowski.
Emmanuel said, Is he not the procurator?
The Communist Party has not the world power that you are accustomed to. The term scientific legate is not known, nor is Fulton Statler Harms the chief prelate of the CIC, inasmuch as no Christian Islamic church exists. He is a cardinal of the Roman Catholic Church. He does not control the lives of millions.
That is good, Emmanuel said.
Then I have done well in my domain, Zena said. Do you agree? Because if you agree...
These are good things, Emmanuel said.
Tell me your objection.
It is an illusion. In the real world, both men hold world power. They jointly control the planet.
Zena said, I will tell you something you do not understand. We have made changes in the past. We saw to it that the CIC and the SL did not come into existence. The world you see here, my world, is an alternate world to your own, and equally real.
I don't believe you, Emmanuel said.
There are many worlds.
He said, I am the generator of world. I and I alone. No one else can create world. I am he who causes to be. You are not.
Nonetheless, you do not understand, Emmanuel said. There are many potentialities that do not become actualized. I select from among the potentialities the ones I prefer, and I bestow actuality onto them.
Then you have made poor choices. It would have been far better if the CIC and the SL never came into being.
You admit, then, that your world is not real, that it is a forgery.
Zena hesitated.
It branched off at crucial points due to our interference with the past. Call it magic if you want, or call it technology. In any case, we can enter retro time and overrule mistakes in history. We have done that. In this alternate world, Bulkowski and Harms are minor figures. They exist, but not as they do in your world. It is a choice of worlds, equally real.
And Belial, he said. Belial sits in a cage in a zoo, and throngs of people, vast hordes of them, gape at him.
Correct.
Lies, he said.
It is wish fulfillment. You cannot build a world on wishes. The basis of reality is bleak because you cannot serve up obliging mock vistas. You must adhere to what is possible, the law of necessity.
That is the underpinning of reality. Necessity.
Whatever is because it must be, because it can be no other way.
It is not what it is because someone wishes it, but because it has to be, that and specifically that, down to the most meager detail.
I know this because I do this.
You have your job and I have mine, and I understand mine. I understand the law of necessity.
Zena, after a moment, said, The woods of Arcady are dead, and over is their antique joy. Of old the world on dreaming fed. Grey truth is now her painted toy, yet still she turns her restless head.
That is the first poem by Yeats, she finished.
I know that poem, Emmanuel said. It ends, But ah, she dreams not now. Dream thou, for fair are poppies on the brow. Dream, dream, for this is also sooth.
Sooth meaning truth, he explained. You don't have to explain, Zena said. And you disagree with the poem.
Gray truth is better than the dream, he said. That, too, is sooth. It is the final truth of all, that truth is better than any lie, however blissful. I distrust this world because it is too sweet. Your world is too nice to be real. Your world is a whim. When Herb Asher saw the fox, he saw deception, and that deception lies at the heart of your world. And that deception, he said to himself, is what I shall undo. I shall replace it, he said to himself, with the veridical, which you do not understand. The fox, as reality, will be more acceptable to Herb Asher than any dream of the fox. I know it. I stake everything on this proposition. Here I stand or fall.
That is correct, Zena said.
Any seeming reality that is obliging, Emmanuel said, is something to suspect. The hallmark of the fraudulent is that it becomes what you would like it to be. I see that here. You would like Nicholas Bukowski not to be a vastly influential man. You would like Fulton Harms to be a minor figure, not part of history. Your world obliges you, and that gives it away for what it is. My world is stubborn. It will not yield. A recalcitrant and implacable world is a real world.
A world that murders those forced to live in it.
That is not the whole of it. My world is not that bad. There is much besides death and pain in it. On Earth, the real Earth, there is beauty and joy and... He broke off. He had been tricked. She had won again.
Then Earth is not so bad, she said. It should not be scourged by fire. There is beauty and joy and love and good people, despite Belial's rule.
I told you that, and you disputed it as we walked among the Japanese cherry trees.
What do you say now, Lord of Hosts, God of Abraham? Have you not proved me right?
He admitted, You are clever, Zena. Her eyes sparkled and she smiled.
Then hold back the great and terrible day that you speak of in Scripture, as I begged you to.
For the first time he sensed defeat. Enticed into speaking foolishly, he realized. How clever she is, how shrewd.
As it says in Scripture, Zena said, I am wisdom. I bestow shrewdness and show the way to knowledge and prudence.
But, he said, you told me you are not holy wisdom, that you only pretended to be.
It is up to you to discern who I am. You yourself must decipher my identity. I will not do it for you.
And in the meantime, tricks.
Yes, Zena said, because it is through tricks that you will learn.
Staring at her, he said, You are tricking me so that I wake, as I woke Herb Asher.
Perhaps.
Are you my disinhibiting stimulus? Staring fixedly at her, he said in a low, stern voice, I think I created you to bring back my memory, to restore me to myself.
To lead you back to your throne, Zena said.
Did I? Zena, steering the fly car, said nothing.
Answer me, he said.
Perhaps, Zena said.
If I created you, I can...
You created all things, Zena said.
I do not understand you. I cannot follow you. You dance toward me and then away.
But as I do so, you awaken, Zena said.
Yes, he said. And I reason back from that, that you are the disinhibiting stimulus which I set up long ago, knowing as I did that my brain would be damaged and I would forget. You are systematically giving me back my identity, Zena. Then... I think I know who you are.
Turning her head, she said, Who?
I will not say. And you can't read it in my mind because I have suppressed it. I did so as soon as I thought it.
Because, he realized,
It is too much for me. Even me. I can't believe it.
They drove on toward the Atlantic and Washington, D.C.